Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Power of Love Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Power of Love, sponsored by the D.D. Jackson Foundation. We shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. We believe that through the power of love, everything is possible with love on your side. I am TJ Jackson, and with me I have both of my brothers, Taj and Terrell Jackson. How are you guys?
What's going on?
What's going on?
How are you guys doing today? I'm feeling great today.
You seem like you're feeling great.
I'm trying to...
I'm trying
to uplift my energy for you guys. You know?
Yeah. For us or for the listeners?
For the listeners and for my co-hosts.
Oh, wow.
Energy is contagious, so I'm trying to bring
Happiness is contagious, too.
Everything is contagious. How are you guys?
Good.
Yeah? Okay, so
I'm a little tired, but I'm good.
Tired. It's June 13th, 2018. It's a wonderful day. It's nice weather in LA, a little warm for me, but I'm not going to complain.
It's been hot lately.
It's been very warm. But we have an amazing show lined up for us. We have a guest. I'm not going to introduce him just yet because first we got to talk about what's going on in the world. Taj and Terrell, let's start with your weeks. Let's get that out of the way. I know Terrell wants to go first.
Yeah.
It's a great announcement. Woo. Go ahead, Terrell.
Baseball season came to an end.
Yes. And
Bryce's team did okay.
Okay.
The team that we beat actually advanced and went to the championship game, but they lost in the championship game.
Okay.
But
the main story is
Agent's team. We won the semifinal on Thursday. And then we had the championship game on Saturday we took it all away.
As a coach, how does that feel? Because here's the thing. I know you guys were struggling in the beginning of the season, right?
We were struggling. And the thing is,
Was it the coaching or was it the kids?
Here, I'll tell you what it is. In the first couple years of ever playing baseball, you play T-ball, then you go up to double A, mm-hmm. and then you go up to triple A. So we're at the triple A division right now. Up until AAA, you can pick your coach. So all the kids that I started off with T-ball, those that continue to play, if they want to stay with me, they can. Most of them choose two.
Yep.
So I've had these kids for the last 2-3 seasons and sometimes in fall ball. So this was the first year, like Adrian's age group. The AAA level is 7 and 8-year-olds.
Okay.
So we were all 7. So this was our first year coming into AAA. So we were a young team.
Wow.
And I had 5. We had to pick the teams. So I had to draft the players, and I was able to get 5 of them. So, I lost a couple. One of the kids, you know, his father wanted to coach, so he was on another team. The other kid I couldn't get, and so on and so forth. But I was able to keep 5 on my team.
Okay.
And there's only 11. So we had 6 new players on our team, and out of the 11 players, we only had 3 8-year-olds. Whereas
so you
everyone
guys were
else,
a young
we
team.
were extremely young.
So you're basically saying it was the coaching.
The coaching that what?
That coaching that won the championship.
Well, my kids could play. My kids could play, and they had heart. And I think it was just getting used to the new field, and because it's a bigger field, and then also they had new teammates that were.
I got to say, I saw the championship game. I saw another game earlier in the season. But you guys, your defense looked good.
We didn't even play that well.
You guys had, I could
and
tell,
that's
though,
scary.
Because
that's
you
scary.
Had some pretty good ball players. But congratulations, Coach.
Yeah,
Jackson.
So that was awesome for me. And
is
we
there
had
anything
a team
you said
after.
To them, like mid-season or anything to, like, because we, you know, everyone heard about losing and this and that. Mm-hmm. Did you have a pep talk or anything with? Because they're at a young age. What did you tell them?
Well, it became almost a thing during the whole year. I would tell them that they're practicing sloppy. You practice sloppy, you play sloppy. And I said, you guys are too good to be sloppy, so I won't allow you to be sloppy. So I just really made – I pushed them. Yeah. I said, you guys are too good to be sloppy. And I don't even think they knew it and they believed it at the beginning because I told them, you guys can win this thing if you want.
Right.
But you got to work. You got to work hard. You know, you're goofing around and you're being silly and you're doing all these things, which is fine. I understand your kids, but for this 1 hour, we only get the feel for an hour. We got to practice hard.
So you got to make
and then
the
we
decision.
Can go back. Yeah.
Do we want to play?
Yes.
Do we want to try to win?
And I sat them down. I said, we can go either way. We can goof around and have fun and I don't care. That's if that's what you guys want to do, or we can try to be the best we can be and we could all improve. And they chose the second one and I pushed them and they answered and I love the results, and I love it for my kids because they worked really hard all for the last 3-4 years, and I don't know if I'll be able to coach them again, and at least they got to experience being a champion, and that was my whole
goal. And that's huge because I was there as a spectator and as an uncle and brother, but it was really good because you could tell that was a moment that I think everyone will cherish and remember.
You
got to
understand,
life.
My team is young. And not only were we young, we were small. So we were really short,
you guys looked
too.
Very small.
We were. We were making plays. Look, the ball was hit to the outfield. We threw it to second threw it to third. We tagged them out. So we were making plays. They don't do that at that level. So. Yeah.
Well, congratulations, man.
Yeah, that felt good. So thanks.
Taj.
And thanks both of you guys for coming.
Yeah, of course. Of course, man. It worked out well.
It was early morning for me.
Yeah, it worked out well before my day got busy with the kids.
I was going to say, 9 o'clock, sir.
Taj, what do you got? Going on?
Yeah, I had a baby reveal that I did on a video I sent to you guys.
Yeah, I saw that. Is it going to be revealed to the public as well?
Yeah. We're thinking about it.
When did you announce that? Because I must have missed it.
I did announce it. Papa T announced it on BBC.
did he really?
Yeah.
So Pops...
Pops...
That's allowed.
The uncles were talking about new babies. And it was like, well, Ziggy's having this.
That was Uncle Jackie.
And then Uncle Jermaine was talking about little Jermaine. Yeah. And Uncle Marlon was talking about, I think, Brittany? Brittany having her baby, and then Papa T's like, well, my daughter-in-law's 4 months or 3 months pregnant, 3.5 months pregnant, and all that. So it was just
he was excited.
Oh, 100%. He was, and that's, you could see the joy in his face. But it
was televised.
This is live TV
on
BBC.
I didn't know if it was BBC Radio.
So,
okay.
So
TV. Yeah.
But what about the reveal? Are we going to reveal that anytime, or is that a private thing? Or
no, it's not. It's not a private thing. I mean, the baby thing wasn't private either. It was just that I'm not one of those people that like flash stuff. But it's one. You know, I'm super excited. You guys are excited for me as well, which I love.
Yeah.
You know, so
I'm very excited for you.
No.
I almost revealed.
Yeah, maybe we should get off the topic.
Get off the topic because I'll probably reveal it within the next day or so.
Well, cool. All right. Well, congratulations, Taj.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, welcome to the club.
Thank you.
Nothing really exciting, I don't think, happened in my week. But the one thing I do want to discuss is the recent suicides, the mm-hmm. high-profile suicides mm-hmm. from mm-hmm. Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain. Mm-hmm. I was looking at you to make sure I pronounced his name right. But
you shouldn't have looked at me when it has to do with, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, and I have to say, first, it kind of leads into our guest. But what I have to say is it's hard for me to talk about it because I can't really relate to it at all. I've never really felt like I've struggled with a serious bout of mental health. And in Spade and Bourdain situation, it seemed like life was going really well. It seemed like life was going well from the outside. You know, I think Spade just sold her company for, you know, either hundreds of millions or billions. So it wasn't a financial thing. And Bourdain has a very successful show on CNN, and he seemed to be doing great professionally. But it just goes to show you, it's not all about money, and it's not all about quote unquote success in the working world. And it's something that I'm happy we have a guest on. His name is John Mabry from Addiction Campuses, and he's going to shine some light on the mental health and the stigma of it as well. And I'm really excited because this is an area where I can admit, you know, as silly, maybe it's not so silly, but I can freely admit I don't know much about it. I've never really was dealt with it, like I said, and, you know, I never really saw any suicide type of... you know, close circles.
Yeah.
So, with that said, I think you guys have any comments first on Spade and Bourdain?
Well, I think the hard thing is, too, when you're a public figure, and not even saying public figure, like in whatever, but their public persona was different than what they were struggling internally for. And that is hard because you have one way that the public perceives you or your friends perceive you if you're not a public person. And then, you know, the way that you actually feel inside. And that's the I think the disconnect is that, you know, there's times when you can feel really sad and low.
Yeah.
And no one else can understand that because they see you as bubbly or they see you as the, you know, the optimistic person.
Right.
Or whatever.
Right.
But everyone goes through that. And so there is, I'm happy that it's shedding light on this. situation.
Yeah. I have some questions that I could ask you guys, but I might as well get John on because he could chime in.
Yes.
But let me do an introduction, a proper introduction, as we do for our guests. John Mabry serves as Director of Public Outreach and is the host of High Sobriety Podcast, which is for addiction campuses. He has a master's in counseling. He's an inventor, an impassioned philanthropist, an award-winning speaker, actor, and stuntman with 13 years in the Screen Actors Guild. He's worked on NCIS, ER, Superbad the movie, got some great media attention from People Magazine, USA Today, Access Hollywood. But John struggled with addiction, depression, and PTSD for over a decade following a leg amputation from a fatal car accident. Things got significantly worse after he found his brother dead from a drug overdose in Beverly Hills. John went from parties at the Playboy Mansion with the great comedian Adam Sandler to living in a trailer on the banks of the Cumberland River in Tennessee after years of bouncing in and out of treatment centers. He went through one of Addiction Campus's treatment centers, and out of all the turmoil arose the opportunity for him to develop Addiction Campus's drug-free workplace training program and host of the High Sobriety Podcast. That's awesome. It's incredible. Today, Mabry is a national advocate for recovery and lives in Nashville, Tennessee, one of my favorite cities, and with his wife of 13 years with their three children. John, are you with us on the phone?
I am here. It is such an honor to be here with you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, John.
Thanks for joining us, man. And first of all, great bio or great intro I read off for you. I have to ask, what's your favorite invention that you invented?
So I only have one.
Okay.
And it's a unique product. So as an amputee, I lost my leg in a car accident. As a senior in college, just a traumatic freak accident, tire blew out in a friend's car, and we rolled, witness reports say, between 6 and 12 times across I-45 outside of Houston.
Wow.
Returning back to school from a spring break trip. And so I had a unique perspective. Once I got into a prosthesis, I got into a prosthetic leg. I started trying to move around and go back to my normal lifestyle, or actually became more active actually afterwards. And I noticed sweat was like this huge deal, that the first prosthetic toe can be tracked back to like the ancient Egyptians, like 3000 years ago. And since then nobody's been able to figure out how to manage sweat inside a prosthetic. And so I found a product, a sock that was already being developed for high endurance athletes. And I turned it around and I put it on my stump one day and I worked out and it solved the problem. And so I went to the company and said, here's an idea. We can take your product, your technology, put it onto an amputee sock. And within a year, we had worldwide distribution on the most advanced moisture managing amputee sock on the planet.
Wow.
Mm. Wow.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I have to start with your story. Just you talking. I came up with so many different questions. My first question is: you were a senior in college when you lost your leg. Is that correct? Is that what you said?
Correct. Yes.
John, take me to that moment. I assume you said from spring break you are living the life. You are young. You are free. You are happy. And then you lose your leg, and you probably tell me what your mental state goes to at that point.
Yeah, so here's what's crazy is at that point in time, I was a senior at a Baylor University in Texas, where my parents went, my aunt and uncles went, my cousins went, my wife went there, and it was kind of ingrained in the family to go to Baylor. It was, you know, wasn't forced on me, but I was fortunate to get to go. It's a private, you know, Baptist university. There's, just so fortunate, and I was very blessed.
Yeah.
And I get to my senior year, I had earned a full ride scholarship. I was a communications major. And I was working as a videographer for the athletic video staff. And so they actually give you the same, you can earn the same scholarship the athletes get for doing video work at certain colleges. This was one of them. And so my senior year, I got the same scholarship that the athletes got. I got to go through the same advisors and counselors. I got the easy classes. They're like, you don't want to take Spanish. You want to take Swahili. And we're going to put you in. And there's two Swahili teachers. We want to put you in with this one. This is the one we put all of our players in. I'm like, all right, sign me up, man. So I'm walking around, and I'm traveling with the team to Notre Dame and all these, you know, big schools, and I'm feeling like an athlete. And then I was dating a cheerleader who was our fraternity sweetheart, I was a social chairman of our fraternity, so I was all over campus, you know, connecting our fraternity with other sororities and other groups and service projects. So it could not have been going any better. Life could not have been any easier. And my grades were good. And yes, I was drinking, doing the fraternity thing, but I wasn't, you know, completely right. addicted to anything at this point. And then tire blows out in a friend's car and everything changed. Wow. 7 seconds of my life that just go in slow motion and still seem to be replaying in the, you know, really deep parts of my brain, of my reptilian brain. They're still kind of like upturning in there sometimes still. Mm. It never really goes away from you, but to fully describe it, it's hard. It's just, it's terrifying. And in those 7 seconds, I told myself, I'm going to die right here. This is where my life is going to end. And I waited for everything to just turn black. I was waiting for, like, you know, color bars to come up, like, or everything to, you know, flash to black. Mm-hmm. And the car stops. We rolled across the median, across the other side of the interstate into a field on the other side. The car stops. Everything just goes, you know, the silence was just deafening. And I thought the car was going to blow up. The very next thing is, in movies, when cars roll 10 times, they blow up. Mm-hmm. I got to get out. So I tried to stand up, and the car's upside down, and I saw my legs getting crushed, and so I saw it all happening, but I looked down at my foot to try to, when I tried to stand up, and my right foot was basically hanging on by some fibers, is the best way to describe it. And so it was flipped up and wrapped around. I could see the bottom of my foot as I tried to step down, which essentially I was stepping onto my shin at that point. And threw myself out of the car to just get away from that pain, that searing pain, wow. and crawled away as quick as I could. Mm. Ended up going through, I crawled back in to get one of my friends out, and the car never did blow up. However, we did lose the driver. We lost my friend Ashley Furman, who was 19 years old, and she didn't do anything wrong. It was just a tire blew out in her SUV, and she had a crew set on 70 on a beautiful day. Nobody was drinking or driving, and so we lost her on that day, March 11, 2000, and it sent me into ultimately 14 surgeries in 1 year. So to go from, man, living a high life in college, senior in college, I had a pretty easy life and a pretty pretty easy go at things. I was not prepared for the way my life got flipped upside down, literally and figuratively.
Yeah,
and so I didn't really know how to cope other than going back to how I learned to cope as a kid when bad things happened. I learned to be funny. Mm. I learned to be, you know, the class clown. And it goes back to, I usually don't say this till sometimes later on in my story, but I actually had some childhood trauma that I never knew that I had until I went through multiple rounds of treatment and tens of thousands of dollars of rehab and thousands of hours of therapy. And this trauma therapist I went to said, look, I don't care about your car accident. I don't care about your leg getting cut off or you losing your friend. And I don't even care about, you know, the fact that you found your brother dead from an overdose years later. What I care about is what happened to you as a kid. Mm. I was like, what are you talking about, lady? You're crazy. I had a really great childhood. And she goes, I'm sure it was just perfect. What happened? And what came to mind, the only thing that came to mind was I had these ear surgeries. I had 6 ear surgeries as a kid from ages like 6 to 15. Mm. I have a transplanted eardrum in 1 ear and three bones in 1 ear are prosthetic bones. Come to find out, as a child, I always felt defective, broken, insecure, unfixable. There's something wrong with me that you don't know about, and I can't tell you because I don't even want to admit it that I'm broken inside. Mm. And the doctors can't fix me because I keep having to go back for more and more surgeries. And I'll tell you what, once she told me that and she described that to me, it was just, I mean, just opened up a whole new world of freedom. Yeah. Well, if not freedom at first, but more work and therapy to work through that. But once I was able to kind of go back and rehash that and work through that, come to find out the car accident just skyrocketed what I already felt inside as a child, but I was able to manage and cover up for you know, a long period of time.
Wow.
And so now you put this robot leg on me. Now I'm a real freak. Now I'm really weird. Now I'm really unfixable. I'm really broken. Give me some painkillers to help with the physical pain. Man, that helps ease the emotional pain as well. Mm. Kill two birds with one stone. And that's kind of how my story got started with the prescription pills.
Let me ask you a quick question. We're going to go back to, I'm a father of many kids, I should just say. My brothers here are our parents. I could say that about Taj now. It's kind of interesting. But that's something that I have to say I'm getting worried about, because it seems, and I hope this doesn't come off wrong, it just seems like today either we're more isolated as a society, or I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it or really articulate. I don't know if it's because of social media. We're always presenting this perfect life when we're not perfect people. But it seems like kids, you know, I didn't go through this as a kid. I never felt like something was wrong with me. But where do we go as parents to help? You know where I'm going, John.
You bring up a huge point. When I go to new talks around the country to students and colleges and high schools and even businesses with Addiction Campus's drug-free workplace program, I go into businesses and just educate them on signs of addiction, not just maybe for them, but for their children or for their neighbor or for their, you know, somebody at their church or whatnot. And so, and I would like to say, if anybody is struggling with addiction right now, Addiction Campuses, we have a nationwide network of treatment centers, and you can call right now 888-614-2251 for any mental health or substance abuse issue. We'll say that number a few times throughout the show, so definitely. Thank you for letting me plug that.
Yep.
Again, the number 888-614-2251 to talk to a treatment specialist right now. But you hit the head, you hit the nail on the head. It's about, there's a theory, and if you pull up Rat Park addiction video.
Okay.
So I'm not. There is scientific evidence to back this up. Some people believe in some of it. Some people believe in all of it. Some people don't believe it at all. I am a firm believer in most of it. And what it describes is there was a scientist that did an experiment in the 70s, 60s, or 70s. Don't quote me on the dates.
Yeah.
But they put a rat inside of a cage all by itself. And when you put a rat inside of a cage by itself and you give it water or water laced with heroin or cocaine, every single time the rat in a cage by itself is going to go for the water laced with the drugs. Okay. Mm. It's going to go for it compulsively, and it's going to die almost every single time.
Mm.
So the psychologist saw and looked at that and goes, well, look, he's by himself. He's isolated. He's alone. He's disconnected from the world around him. So they built Rat Park, and it's this huge table that had all these rats, and they get like tunnels and balls, and it was like heaven for rats. Everything a rat about town would want. And they give them the same water options, same drinking options. Not one rat ever overdosed, and not one rat ever used the drugged water compulsively.
Wow.
And it leads one to believe that maybe it's about connection or disconnection that can be a leading cause for addiction.
Yeah.
That maybe it's not just the chemical hooks in the drugs, it's not just the genetics. But it's also like, man, I'm disconnected from the world around me, from my peer group, from myself, and social media just fuels that. Because as you guys were talking about before I even came on, is, hey, yeah, I look, I want to post to make sure I look good online, look good on Instagram. I bet if I were to post half the time when I'm posting something of what I want everybody else to see, and I also post the picture of what I'm actually doing at the time, you know, you're going to see me, you know, with my foot propped up on the couch, sitting around going, here's what I want the world to go see, but here's what I'm actually doing. I'm actually sitting in this room by myself, and my kids are right over my shoulder. I'm not even talking to them. Mm-hmm. I'm isolating myself from them, and I'm in the same room with my own children, you know? So it's scary. It's really scary.
So the importance of connection and the importance of fighting against isolation, obviously, especially with kids, teenagers love to isolate themselves. I've went through it many times, and I do everything I can to try to connect. But I think you're 100% right. I actually agree with you. I think that I never heard about the Rack Park experiment. I think it's fabulous. I think it's very powerful. I'm a believer in it. I haven't seen it, but from what you described, I think it's. I think there's really power in numbers, you know, and power in community, and that's something that we've not only experienced here, but what our listeners have raved about. You know, it's all, everyone's got their little issues and everyone's got their struggles, but it's when they feel like they have a support system, they seem to be able to fight and you know, fight better. So I'm a firm believer of that.
I mean that's why 12-step programs have been so successful. That's why, you know, treatment programs, Addiction Campuses, treatment facilities are so good for people. They get people reconnected. They give you a chance to get the outside world away from you for a little bit, get the distractions away for a little bit, let you focus on yourself and start the process of a road to recovery in a healthy way.
So let's go back to your story, John, where you lost your leg as a teen. Well, you were probably early 20s, right? You said 20?
Maybe? Young, yeah, 23. Yeah.
Okay. Obviously, that's completely life-changing. What was that first year like? Was your family there to support you? Was there anything that What was your struggles? What helped you out? What, in case there's a listener that's going
hold on,
through.
Hold on, before I have it's with that.
Yes, please.
Because this might be an interesting thing too. Did you feel any guilt because you said one of your friends had passed during the accident? In terms of that, did you feel?
Yeah,
like,
good why, question. You know, I really didn't, based on the situation, based on the fact that like none of us could have done anything differently. Mm-hmm. That I, you know, thankfully I never really, really took like survivor's guilt. I never really felt much of that. It was good. Just kind of, yeah. Man, she didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. Nobody, you know, if there was some alcohol or drugs involved in it, I'm sure there'd be, you know, major resentment that I'd be working with my 12-step sponsor on still.
Yeah.
But it was just completely innocent. Okay. Well, you know what? I'm lying. I'm gonna be honest. So I don't tell all audiences this, but the accident was part of Firestone Ford Explorer debacle.
Yeah,
and you guys may be a little too young to remember, but back in 2000, they recalled millions of Firestone tires because tread was separating off the tires and making the Ford Explorers roll.
I remember that.
And the company knew about it for years. Yeah, so we were a part of that. We were one of the victims of that class action lawsuit.
Wow.
So that added to my lack of recovery, I guess you'd say, because the day before I walked the stage to get my diploma from Baylor University after having my leg amputated 6 weeks before, I had 14 surgeries that year. I had great family support. I had great support from people around me. I got back to school as soon as I could. I finished my schoolwork and I wanted to graduate. I had a job lined up. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, man, I've got this lawsuit thing that's going to come through. And you know what? The day before I graduated, I signed a multi-million-dollar lawsuit. And you talk about feeling like an athlete before, like I said in my story, when I just got a one-year scholarship like the athletes got.
Yeah.
You signed me up for a class action, you know, settlement from Firestone and Ford Explorer. You know, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
So I thought.
Yeah, of course.
It actually ended up serving me a lot worse than it did if I didn't have it. Let's just say that. Didn't turn out as pretty as one might think.
Yeah.
So there was that additional struggle on top of that.
Yeah.
But it allowed me to go so I graduated and I moved out to California to work on a master's in counseling, thinking I'm going to go help other people. Subconsciously doing it so I didn't have to look at myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people in the healthcare industry, nurses, other people who are in jobs that where they're there to help other people, if you're not helping yourself, please go get some counseling, go get some therapy, go get yoga, meditation, join the gym, whatever, get a trainer, do what you gotta do. Take care of you the best that you can. Then you're gonna be able to take care of the clients, the people that you serve, the patients that you serve in a much better way. But I went in to go serve other people, but it was really to like just avoid me.
Medications
came into the picture. Once I got separated from all my support system in Texas, things kind of went downhill when I got out to Southern California.
Even though
I looked good on everything, was looking good working with charities and helping raise money for kids with disabilities, I just kept getting worse and worse.
Would you value isolation to play a big part in that?
Yes. Because I bought a condo on Mission Bay in Pacific Beach.
Yeah.
And here I am in graduate school sitting in this condo. I can vividly remember sitting in this condo one of the first nights I bought it. I'm sitting there by myself with this huge 65-inch screen TV, which they didn't even have back then. And I went and got one from whatever store. It's not even Electronic Express or one of those out there. And I'm sitting in this living room completely alone. I don't even have electricity, but I felt like I was on top of the world because I got this condo where I can hear the ocean and I got a big screen TV. And I was completely alone. And that pretty much summed up my emotional state for a long period of time, even though I got married, even though I was doing things in graduate school and working for a nonprofit. Ultimately it was my soul, my spirit was isolated.
We
can feel connected online, feel connected on social media, and even in our church you can show up on Sundays and Wednesdays and do your church thing, but you could still be isolated and alone, you know, spiritually and emotionally. And I think that's where a lot of people kind of fail to see that.
Yeah, that's powerful stuff.
That's John.
We're here talking with John Mabry from Addiction Campuses. John, we're going to go in and out of your story, but I want to make sure we understand what the hotline is. A hotline for addiction campuses. Who is that for? If I'm struggling with, what can I call?
So any addiction or mental health issue, if you're not sure where to go, this is striking a chord with you. You feel emotionally or spiritually disconnected. You feel isolated or alone. If you want to find a 12-step meeting, we'll help find somebody a 12-step meeting in their area. We'll help somebody find a therapist in their area if we need to. But we do have a network of treatment centers around the country that offer a full continuum of care from detox down to our long-term aftercare program, which is a 12-month aftercare program where we have representatives in our office calling and texting individuals on a regular basis, daily sometimes, when they get out of treatment to make sure that they're well-supported when they leave our treatment centers. So we offer a whole continuum of care. So anybody struggling with any addiction or mental health issue, you're not sure where to go, where to turn, we're going to take probably around 19,000 calls in our call center this month to give you an idea of the kind of volume we deal with. And we place people in treatment all across the country, not just in our own treatment centers. And that number, please call right now, 888-614-2251. Again, or you go to addictioncampuses.com or call 888-614-2251 to talk to a treatment specialist right now. Beautiful. and get the help that you're looking for.
Beautiful. John, this is Daryl. I wanted to ask you a question. You've spoken a lot about therapy and all the hours that you've gone through therapy. I was wondering, when was the first time you went to therapy, if you don't mind sharing? And when did that all start?
Yeah, great question. I've never been asked that question. That's solid one, dude. Thank you for asking. First time I went was after my accident. I'm laid up in the hospital for weeks on end, and we're trying to save my leg. They took one of my abdominal muscles out, attached it into the hole that I had in the foot. So I was in ICU for umpteen number of nights. And so as I'm in the hospital, my parents are like, hey, you may want to think about having you talk to somebody when you get done with this thing, when you get out of the hospital. And I was like, you know what? You're probably right. And so antidepressants might be something you may want to consider. And I was like, you know what? That might make sense. So we went to a family friend, psychologist, and it was a start. But here's the problem is there's going to therapy and then there's going to therapy. Mm-hmm. So there's working out, going and getting a workout in, or there's going and getting a really good workout. Mm-hmm. So you can show up and, lift a couple of, 5-pound weights,
go through the motions,
three reps and leave. And or you can go and do a full, CrossFit workout or whatever your thing is.
Yeah.
And so I went into therapy just going, I'm just going to show up and I'm just going to kind of roll through it. And that's all I knew to do. I didn't know how important it was to get really real. I didn't know how important it was to like really divulge what was really going on, because mm-hmm. my whole life I had in my head put on the front that everything's okay, because my ear surgeries, I always felt funky. I always felt different. I always felt ugly inside. So I always put up this front that everything was okay. And so when I went into therapy, I did the same thing. I wasn't honest. I wasn't real. I was just kind of surface level stuff. And I did that for years until I ended up, doing the after graduate school, moving up to LA and doing acting and getting an agent and acting coaches and all that. And then next thing you know, I'm living in a trailer on the banks of the Cumberland River and outside of Nashville. Mm. And it was because I wasn't real. I wasn't getting honest. I wasn't getting on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
So highly encourage people, if you're going to, one, seek help. Yes, please seek help. Two, got to be real and let people know your deepest fears and your deepest thoughts. And that's where real healing comes in.
So John, was it another low that made the switch for you where you got real? What was it that made you make the switch from being, as you would say,
just going through the motions,
and hiding what's.
Yeah. Consequences are a great thing. When you're going through it, you don't want consequences. You want life to be as easy as possible. But if you're struggling in your job, if you're struggling in your relationships, your marriage, whatever it is you may be going through, consequences can be good. They're driving factors to help you get more real and listen to those, listen to your gut. And so, I had some financial resources to pay for treatment. I had financial resources to put food on the table and pay the mortgage. But as those started to dwindle with, making poor investment decisions while, under the influence and buying pieces of property in Southern California, I should have bought at the top of the market that I'm still paying for.
Yeah.
you know, you finally get to a point where it's like, man, maybe I got to start. Maybe my consequences are piling up a little more. I don't want to keep going down this road because next thing you know, I'm not going to have, you know, I'm not going to have a home to go back to. At least my wife would let me come home when I was living in the trailer with a roommate named Beaver, by the way. At least I could leave Beaver during the day and go see my wife and kids, and I could come back and just sleep in the trailer. But she wasn't letting me stay at home. So, you know, consequences kept piling up, and that was a big motivation for me.
Yeah, interesting. It's very interesting.
Okay, so John, I want to talk real quick because I could talk to you for a while actually, but we're running shorter on time, and I want to just make sure I get to the day you found your brother, who had passed in Beverly Hills from a drug overdose. Correct.
So man, here's the thing: the drugs did not kill my brother. The drugs did not help get me into treatment. It was the stigma. It's the stigma that
explain that
somebody like us explain. Is dealing with addiction. So stigma. So if somebody has cancer, which is a chronic disease that gets worse over time if left untreated. If somebody has diabetes, if left untreated over time, gets worse and can kill you. If somebody has heart disease, same thing. If somebody has addiction, it's like, shh, don't talk about it. They just don't have much willpower, and they just have a moral failing, and it's their fault. Well, you know what? If I have cancer, say I have skin cancer. It may be my fault that I sat in the sun way too long, you know, in my younger years, I have skin cancer now because of me. Okay, well, still, I need to go deal with it.
Yeah.
I need to go get treatment for it. I need to get medications for it. I need to go maybe join a support group because my hair's falling out from the chemo, and I'm, you know, distraught from it. Man, same thing with addiction, though. It's like we don't talk about it. We say it's their fault. We point the finger at them, and they're making bad decisions. They're the reason their job is lost and their, you know, kids are – you know, not in their life anymore. Okay, yes, they made some bad decisions. Yes, I made bad, poor decisions. But ultimately, I needed to be able to feel safe to ask for help without being judged. Mm. And so many people don't feel safe to go, you know what, I may need to step away from my job for 30 days and go get treatment at addiction campuses and talk to my employer about that and then see if I can come back and have my job. Because if you do what I did, you wait till you get fired. You wait till you get fired, and then now the job's gone, and you're going to treatment anyway.
Yeah.
So you please, people, we gotta quit looking down on people who are struggling with addiction and lift them up to come out and ask for help.
Yes.
And support them as communities. Help bring them meals. If you have a neighbor that's struggling with addiction, go bring them a meal. Go say, hey man, can we pray for you at church this week? What can we do? Can we, you know, whatever it is. With somebody with cancer, that's what communities do. They come and help people, you know, help the family struggling with cancer. With addiction, we got to have the same thing, and it's possible. We can do that.
And it's I agree completely, John, because I feel like, and a lot of it for me, when I know, I've gotten better over the years, but you rewind 10 years ago, if I learned someone was going through something, and it's not that I don't want to help, it's just a lot of times I'm just speechless. I don't know how to help. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. It's just lately I've learned that just, you know, just being there and just having a normal conversation is the first step, you know? So
yeah.
A lot of it is, I think, I don't know, being shy is the wrong word, but just, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it.
You bring up a good point. I mean, no, it's a really good point of like, because we don't have the conversation enough that we're like, back in the 1980s, if somebody had cancer and their hair was going to fall out from chemo, we wouldn't know what to say.
Yeah,
but
like
now
mind
we're
your
like,
own business,
dude, bring your casserole.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? I think that's what it is.
I'm just going to drop.
I think that's what it is. I think we were like kind of, I don't want to say us in general, but I think our generation was kind of like mind your own business and, you know, don't interrupt other people's privacies. And I think that's what it was. But I think you're 100% right. I think today, you know, I think we're moving that way and I think we can do a lot better. But I think we just got to be more connected. And I love what you said. If you see someone who's struggling with anything, go ahead and take them something and just open up a conversation. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, I have another.
Drop a card off in their mailbox. So whatever.
Okay, question for you. Earlier in the show, you mentioned how you have mental episodes from the car crash still, where sometimes I assume it's not often, but every now and then you'll replay that or revisit it. I don't know if you're familiar, John, but my brothers and I, we lost our mother at a young age, and I still go through that, you know, where the day when I found out and actually hugging my Uncle Jermaine and just that day, that difficult day in my life. What do you do to to help yourself with those episodes today? Is there anything you do? Is there, do you just play them out? Do you, is there any kind of approach you have?
Man, so it goes back to the connection piece. Is there's times when there's times when I wake up still. This is, my car accident was 2000, and then I found my brother dead in 2008. So there's a big space between there. And here we are, 2008, 10 years later. I still wake up every now and then screaming in the middle of the night. And it doesn't happen very often, but there's times when I wake up screaming. My wife's like, "Everything's okay. Everything's okay." And sometimes I just need somebody to just tell me everything's okay. Yeah. You know. So I have found that through a 12-step program sponsor, through being honest with my friends and the people around me, if something's bothering me, I can go to them and let them know what's going on. And so many times, all we just need to hear is just like that inner child inside of us that we all just want to hear that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
So it's okay to feel that way.
Yeah,
and I guess it comes back to the connection piece. It's just not going through it alone, because it's easy to just like, man, I don't need to tell anybody that this is bothering me today.
Right.
When that could just be a catalyst for just a building, you know, snowballing into something, you know, way bigger down the road.
Yeah, it's powerful.
So it basically comes down to your support team.
Yeah, you got to be able to open up and be free and have that support team that's ready to help you. You know, and
so like in LA, you know, when you're you know, pursuing acting out there or music, whatever you're doing, and you have a publicist and you have a manager and you have an agent and you have a nutritionist and you have a travel agent and all these people supporting you, you can have that in your life today and not be a rock star. You can be a mother of three children, at a single mother at home with three children, and you can feel like a rock star because you have built a support system around you of a pastor, a clergy member, family member, you know, neighbors. You can feel like more of a rock star than Taylor Swift right now if you choose to do that. And it starts with letting people know what's going on with you and making a conscious effort to make a human connection with those that you trust.
Wow.
John, I have a question for you. When we lost our mother, it was over the summer, and I was in college, and I wasn't in school when we lost her. I still remember going back to college, you know, the first day, and feeling different. You know, people went on trips. You know, you kind of get connected again with all your friends and everybody else. But this time I was going back to school, and I lost my mother. And it just felt different for me with everybody else, you know, looking at me. I'm curious to know, did you feel any different going back to school after your car crash?
Absolutely. My first time going back was for a fraternity event, and my parents drove me up from San Antonio. We lived 3 hours away in San Antonio. We drive up to Waco, Texas, and I didn't get the memo that you're supposed to wear a navy blue navy blue suit for our fraternity picture, but I wanted to be in the fraternity picture. So I show up, and I'm wearing a khaki suit, and I'm in a wheelchair. My leg is propped up. I have a brace. This is before my amputation, but I have a brace on it, and I got a brace on my other leg. I felt like a freak. And I was there, and I did it, and I still have that picture, and I stood out like a sore thumb. But I'll tell you what, I'm glad I did it anyway. You know, even if you feel different going back into a situation in your life when you don't feel comfortable, go do it anyway. You know, I'm glad I did that, because it was a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
You don't have to look perfect. You don't have to have the same coat on as everybody else. And you only have to be standing up to show up and just be you as you are, broken and defective, and it's okay.
Yeah.
That's great. Wonderful words, yeah.
Another question for you, John. Depression. How tough was that road for you? Did you struggle with depression? And if so, what did you do what are you doing to help you with depression?
Yeah, so that's huge, huge, huge question. Again, if somebody's struggling with major or any level of depression and you're not sure where to turn, you know, definitely pick up the phone, call one of our treatment specialists at Addiction Campuses. Okay. The number again, 888-614-2251. Even if you're just struggling with minor level depression, that can turn into a whole lifelong, you know, debilitating issue. So let's nip it in the bud now.
Yeah.
I first started with medications. It was first kind of like numb out, and then I learned over a decade of being on being medicated, highly medicated, not just on drugs and not just alcohol and prescription pills, but you know, legit stuff that I felt I needed. I have learned in my process that the Western medicine is not the end all be all.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of it serves to put a Band-Aid on it.
Yeah.
And so I finally started reaching out and trying new things that we do on our campuses, at addiction campuses, that we offer. You don't have to do it, but you can. It's meditation, yoga, just outdoor, you know, being outdoors, doing hiking. We have zip line courses, things like that to get people out of your head. We have cooking classes. So, you know, anything that's artistic in nature or where you're creating something and you're not sitting on your phone or sitting behind a, you know, sitting behind a computer.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things really help, you know, my energies flow a lot better when I'm out doing things like that,
as
opposed to just expecting a medication to fix me, because it's just putting a Band-Aid on it. But as soon as I take the Band-Aid off, as soon as you remove that medication, the issue is still there. Well, mm-hmm. Let me get out in nature a little bit more. Let me connect. Let me get in some meditation, some prayer more.
So powerful.
Those types of things.
I completely support that. It's so powerful. And you know, there's a lot of natural things you can do with just your time and yourself that can really help.
Essential oils.
Yeah.
Essential oils have been huge for me. Yeah. So I've gone from like 11 medications, the first treatment center I got out of, to two. I'm on two medications
you.
Now.
Good for you.
And I supplement that with essential oils and diet and exercise and just a, you know, kind of common sense.
Yep.
Natural balance of life.
Well
exercise, diet, rest.
John, TJ mentioned it earlier. There was a couple suicides this week. And I don't really want to talk about their situation so much, but just suicide as a whole. I have to assume, or maybe I'm wrong on this, but you talked earlier about getting to a low point and you having that's the point where you said, I need therapy. I need to do more and really dig deep and do the work. I'm thinking that maybe some people don't go, you know, make that turn to get better. And some go the opposite way and get worse. And, you know, maybe that's how suicide... I really don't know too much about it. And I was wondering if you can just help and share some knowledge on that and how people get to such a dark place.
Yeah, man. I don't know if I'm the most qualified for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just speak from my experience. Yeah. My experience would allow me to feel comfortable saying that I feel like I was so afraid of what my truth was, or what other people would think of me if I shared my truth. What are other people going to, you know, like Anthony Bourdain or, you know, Kate Spade, like, what is somebody going to really think of me if I shared my absolute truth? And their absolute truth is whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I think if we got to get to a point, it goes back to find a trusted advisor, a trusted person that you can. And for me, it wasn't sharing all at once. It wasn't sharing the fact that I felt like a freak. I mean, ultimately, it was kind of like, I feel like a freak, and I'm walking around this world acting like I'm not a freak. And there's a discord there. There's a disconnect. And I'm like, man, I want everybody to think I got everything put together. I don't know crap of what I'm doing, man. Mm-hmm. And so if you get to that level where if you find a trusted advisor to just share that with, I found that it eased the pain, you know, or it eased the pressure. And it didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen in one session. It happened over a period of time of coming back to somebody that I trusted and kind of, you know, imagine carrying a big boulder over on your shoulder. And you just, every time you go in and share with somebody, you share a little bit more and you feel safe going, okay, they didn't completely isolate and cut me out of their life or cut me off as a client, as a patient, by me sharing that. And next thing you know, I started unloading a little bit of that boulder at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, weight gets lighter and lighter.
That's
I guess that would be my response to that.
A lot of it comes to acceptance and forgiveness and not judging so much.
Yeah.
People.
Yes.
All right, John. So before we close out the show, I want to first just talk about your podcast. I should say the Addiction Campuses podcast, High Sobriety, that co-host, right? Just give us a quick, maybe spend a minute just telling us what you guys do on the podcast and what kind of shows you've had and just more about that.
Yeah, so it's called High Sobriety. So one, I love the name that that my team helped me come up with, and we have interviewed everybody from. I've got three members of the band Korn. We've had a Three Dog Night, Chuck Negron from Three Dog Night, who sang Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog. We've had Todd Harrell from Three Doors Down. If you remember Three Doors Down, they were huge, you know,
absolutely.
90s, early 2000s. He ran over and killed a guy here in Nashville and he has spent his time in jail, and he's on the road to recovery and is sharing his story. Todd Harrell's an amazing individual. And we've had my trauma therapist. If you're dealing with trauma, and that's something, my trauma therapist, Dr. Lee Norton, who helped me understand I had childhood stuff I didn't even know that was there. We've had her on. We've had authors, and we've had some of our team at Addiction Campuses talking about what they do within the treatment industry to help people get treatment, help people find the help that they need. So a wide range of folks. Even food addiction. We had Sarah Roberts is a food addiction specialist. We've had her on there. Right. So definitely a wide range of topics, and I'm honored to be a host of that show.
Great. Nice. Great. Okay, so John, one more quick question. You went through a lot in life. It's obvious, it's apparent, you went through more than what seems, the average person goes through. How do you stay so optimistic, so upbeat?
I don't do it on my own. I do it with the help of teams of people around me. When I say teams, I have a prosthetic team that works on my prosthetic leg. If you look at my Instagram account at John Clint Mabry on Instagram, a couple days ago, I have a picture of my prosthetic team that helps me get my leg done. I have a team at work that helps me accomplish the things that I get to do at work. I have a team in recovery that helps me do recovery things, and I have my family. I've got my wife Sarah and our three children, Larson, Austin, and Sawyer, my parents. And so it's all about, it's not about looking good all the time or being good all the time. It's about being real and having that team around you to be able to go to them and say, hey, man, my leg sucks today. I need some help. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, I'm not doing well at work today. I'm kind of struggling getting these things accomplished. Can you help me? And then at home going, hey, I'm struggling at home today. Can we talk about it, honey? And so
it's great. Man, it's support. It's support. Yeah. It's a combination of support and you being open and vulnerable and being honest and authentic with where you're at in that moment.
It's so hard to do in this world.
It is very hard to do, but that's the challenge for all our listeners who are struggling with something. Reach out to that loved one. If there's a broken relationship, fix it and rely on it. And just, we're all humans and we're all people and we all want the best for each other. Yeah. John,
absolutely.
John, before, did you want to say something, Josh? No? Oh, okay. We have to close out the show. We went a little over, but before we do so, what we like to do is give our guests 30 seconds or so to say whatever it is. If you want to plug something, if you want to leave it with a quote, whatever you want to say, 30 seconds, around 30 seconds. Go ahead and go, John. I should have given you some warning, so I apologize for that, but 30 seconds.
Yeah, whatever, exactly, you want. Man. Thank you. appreciate that. No, I would just, guys, we're all in this thing together. We're all struggling with something, but there's also an amazing life of light and positive energy on the other side of the negativity and on the other side of the struggle that you're going through. The heart is a muscle, and it doesn't grow and get bigger and get stronger without breaking first. With, muscle fibers break down before they get bigger and better. So know if your heart is broken right now, it's okay. It's okay. But reach out for help. Call Addiction Campuses right now. Go to addictioncampuses.com or call us at 888-614-2251. We can help you out.
There you have it. Well done. And he came up big without even a warning. Great job, John. Perfect. Great job. Well, John, on behalf of my brothers, we want to just thank you for joining us on Power of Love. You shout out some amazing knowledge and information for not only us, but all of our listeners. And we really want to thank you for doing that.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, thank you so much for the opportunity. God bless.
Take care, buddy.
Take care.
All right. Thanks, John. Right. What a great, great show. Incredible. Great guy.
Yeah. Incredible.
Right. I just loved what my takeaway was. He's went through so much, and obviously it's a road to get there. If we caught him right after, it may not be the same, but I think to sum up the show, dealing with the two big suicides that we know about, there's light at the end of the tunnel. And I love what he said about muscle fiber. It's very true. If you go to the gym right now and work out strong, you're going to be in pain tomorrow, the next day. You break first before you rebuild. So anyone who's going through a down moment, you're just rebuilding. Life's going to get better. Life's going to get stronger for you tomorrow or maybe next week. Stay in it. Stay strong and utilize your support system. Utilize your family. Utilize your friends. Utilize your colleagues. You're not in this alone. Brothers, you guys want to say anything else before we close it?
Covered it all. Okay. Birthday shout-outs.
Yes.
Three very, I shouldn't say important, but three listeners.
Yes.
That Gigi, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Gigi.
April,
happy birthday. Wow.
And Carol.
Carol, wow. So three great supporters.
Within a couple days apart.
I love it. Happy birthday to the three.
Must have been a good month.
The three queens. Yeah, happy birthday, you guys.
Yeah.
All right, well, cool. That was our show. Thank you guys so much for listening. Again, a special shout out to Addiction Campus's John Mabry. Again, that phone number, he said it several times, but I got to say it again. It's 888-614-2251. If you're struggling with any type of addiction or struggling with anything, go ahead and give that number a call. They will there to help you, talk through your situation, just to help you. I just want to make sure you guys know you're not alone. My brothers want to make sure the same thing. We are not alone, and we want to spread love. And that's pretty much it.
You are loved. Yep.
We will see you guys, or talk to you guys next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Have a great rest of your week. Adios. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the D.D. Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.